visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Good evening to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. We'll start off this hour's programs with a spotlight. After that, we have To My Brother. The program examines the universal principles contained in the teachings of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, and their importance for contemporary individuals and societies. Then it's time for our radio productions feature, and we round up this hour's programs with Hadith of the Day. This program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. Stay with us for the next hour.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, in 1945, the United Nations was formed even while World War II was still raging on. This international organization was created with the goals of ending war and promoting peace, justice, and encouraging better living for all humankind. Well, the organization is commemorating its 80th year, but has clearly fallen short of its original goals. More than 150 heads of states will address the United Nations General Assembly as the Zionist genocide on Gaza is about to hit its two-year mark. Will these leaders stop the genocide or just continue to speak but be impotent on the ground, especially when it comes to the Zionist regime? We'll be taking a look at this 80th year gathering of the United Nations General Assembly on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Said Moaz Shah, international law expert and geopolitical analyst out of Geneva. And Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start it off in Geneva. And Said Moaz, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressed the UN saying that impunity is the mother of chaos. I mean, what are your thoughts on his words? And if this is the case, why has this organization given impunity to the Israeli regime?
Thank you so much for this, starting off with this, right above might. These were the words of President Macron from France to really hit it home. The Europeans are now tired. The world is now reaching a point of exhaustion of the excuses of this Israeli machinations. They are not interested in their own hostages, let alone the safety of the Palestinians, their own people. We know that they killed on October 7th and the events after that and blamed it on Hamas. That all that has come to light, the true face of Israel has become exposed, or it has always been exposed, but now finally the people have lost patience. And you bring it rightly that why it took so long, why it took almost 70 plus years, 80 years, like you said, for this to reach this moment. And unfortunately, this is a sad reality, and I don't really think this is that much of a major threshold. This was just one card in the playbook that, again, I want to be an optimist. It is a great moment. We should be celebrating the progress. And it is moving in the right direction, but it isn't the direction that needs to be there where each Palestinian child should not have to wake up tomorrow with the realization that they may not be there the next day. And that's still a reality we face. I mean, Israel is just thinking about sending another army unit into Gaza, saying it's going to respond to the recognition of Palestine that was rightfully due from the first day. I mean, to be honest, for the UK, let me just be very blunt, they should have recognized Palestine after World War One with the promises that they gave to the people who then supported them. So this is a long time in the making. They deserved it. We'll have to see what is the actual impact in the coming days. But sad to say, Israel is probably going to act more aggressively. And I'd like to see what the international community will do action-wise. Will we do embargo on military? Will we start talking about sanctions? This is the reality we hope to see from the European nations in particular. But as you can see, the United States, I mean, what? Look at the wording. They're saying that if you recognize Palestine, is as if like you're giving support to Hamas. I mean, he's trying to twist words, again, trying to feed into that rhetoric.
Right.
And, you know, that rhetoric is now done with. So let's see what the future action brings.
All right, let's turn to London, get Said Mohsen in on this discussion. I mean, the UN Secretary General said peace rooted in international law is humanity's first obligation. Does international law still exist? I mean, let's talk about Guterres' statement.
It only exists for those who have the luxury of having veto rights. It exists for the Anglo-Zionist Empire because they're the ones that control the UN. And quite frankly, I've got to say, looking at what is unfolding in the UN today, I'm quite sickened. I mean, the hypocrisy, the two-facedness, the double games, the double standards are all accumulated there in these kinds of pitiful speeches. I mean, first of all, let's take the reality on the ground. This will have no effect on Palestinians other than empowering Israel even more to go ahead and wipe them out further, because the Israelis aren't listening to any of this international, these international bodies, etc. The pressure on Israel, who's going to apply the pressure on Israel? I mean, who's going to implement anything that has been said by Macron, etc. today? Who's going to fund any of the changes? I mean, you know, how much is going to actually happen in practical terms? Where's this state going to be? What are the borders? And when will it happen? Is there a timeline? I mean, it's pure theater, Marcia. What we're seeing is just leaders who are terrified that their own positions are under threat now because their own people have woken up to their own tyranny and all the lies that they've been spouting for years about freedom and justice and equality and democracy. All of those lie in tatters on the ground in the rubble with Gazan children and their blood and bones. And now what these criminals, these leaders, they're nothing short of criminals, Macron and Starmer, they're all complicit, the Saudis as well. They're just trying to cover their backs and to try and, again, put the wool over people's eyes to make it look like something's going to happen when they're going back to is rehashing a totally obliterated notion of two states, which is never going to happen. That's the reality. Mm. What we're seeing is theater, and right. We're seeing just another sham, and the UN is again promoting this nonsense.
Hmm. Well, Said Moaz, Guterres has also called for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza now. Will it happen?
The chances of it happening are higher now. And I'm not to say that I do feel my fellow colleague is absolutely accurate. We've seen just only words, and we haven't seen action to the extent that's necessary for the Palestinian people. So, yes, I do feel the pessimism that he is mentioning, and it does seem it's theatrics, but it does have impact. Recognizing a state, especially when you are members of the Permanent Council, Security Council, this is significant. It's something that we can't just disregard as something that has no value. Now, how this will be translating in the coming days, this is something that is yet to see, and you're right.
So let me just jump in here, Said Moaz. Sorry to interrupt, just jump in here. So recognizing a state is important. Tell me what it means exactly, because as Said Mohsen said, If I mean, what is left? I mean, if we look at the West Bank even, and the land and the settlements that the Israeli regime continue to build, Gaza, we know the overall situation there. Yesterday I was talking to our correspondent, and she was telling me, like, even recently, just in the last few days, 100 more checkpoints have been added to the thousands of whatever that already exists in the West Bank that is totally disconnected, the Palestinian towns, from each other. So talking about recognizing a Palestinian state is one thing, but tell me, what do you think is concrete about this?
Well, the nations that have decided to recognize Palestine not only are obviously opening embassies and creating channels of communication, diplomatic channels, which before were done in other matters. So the Palestinian voice is increasing in these countries, and they will have an official recognition this way. Like I said, practically how this will translate over time, we have yet to see. I mean, if you look at even the situation in Afghanistan, what is the recognition by Russia brought them? And there are chances and opportunities to be exploited that were not available before. How that's done, I agree the chances of it are slim in the beginning. I mean, if you look at Palestinian recognition that's happened already in Spain and other European nations that did it before, what's the benefit that they've had? And that's a question that needs to be studied. But definitely, the more recognition you have is something that Israel can't deny you. Mm-hmm. And if the idea of the two-state solution, if I may just end with this, is going anywhere, if it sounded dead before, it is more alive now than it was before October 7th.
Okay. Well, Said Mosa, now many leaders may be talking about the Palestinian issue at the General Assembly. What do you make of the fact that some of the same ones who are condemning the genocide in Gaza are at the same time helping the Israelis, whether we're talking about Muslim countries or Western countries?
Well, because it's all set up like this, Marzia. The reality is that this is an order that has come from the same axis of evil. I can't describe them as anything else. And in it are involved Arab monarchs, Western so-called democratic states, transnational corporations, the whole transhumanist movement even. I mean, the neoliberal movement, the neoconservative movement. This is all part of an axis which has a plan, and it does things in a coordinated way. And Israel is at the heart of its plans. The injustice, the imperialism, the colonialism, it was all part and parcel of that existential evil, as far as I'm concerned. And so what and the UN indeed, and virtually every other body, the IAEA, go on to the WHO, they're all involved. I mean, let's first of all come to this reality that the illusion of some kind of international order which has any justice or is in some way free or is in some way fair or wants something good for humanity, that's all utter, absolute nonsense. And the genocide in Gaza is the biggest evidence yet of that being the reality. Now, let's get on to the actual practicalities of this so-called solution. Have they talked in this document about Israel and its apartheid? Have they talked about the injustice and how they're going to stop that? Are we going to see the prevention of apartheid? Are we going to see the dismantling of the Israeli apartheid state as we know it? Are we going to see that the Palestinian Authority, for that matter, the puppet Palestinian Authority, who presumably is the one that these people want to confer the authority to? Well, that's not even an elected body. The PA Authority lost its authority long ago. It's basically an authoritarian regime presided over by Abbas, who's long expired, his term has long expired in any kind of political democratic sense. And he's essentially a puppet who does what they want him to. Is he going to lead this new so-called Palestinian state? And in what way is he going to do it that's different from what he's done before? Because what he's done before is absolutely sell the rights of Palestinians, allowed these settlements to happen. He's penalized any of the armed resistance, which is actually fought for the Palestinians, has put up some kind of struggle. Indeed, he's going to be just another sellout who's going to basically go after even the families of those resistance soldiers who basically defended or tried to defend Gaza. So I see no future, no hope in a two-state solution. It's like saying the Nazis, when they lost the war against the supposed good guys, the Allies, which they certainly weren't, that was another imperialist exercise in domination in Europe. But it's like saying you'd expect the Jews to stay in a sort of an existence with Nazis while the Nazis were still in power even after the war. That's what you're asking. You're asking the Zionists to continue an Israeli apartheid state, and you're asking the Palestinians to accept that, to live next door to them, as if they will even allow that, given the reality on the ground of like a Jewish supremacist violent movement, which has now captured the most of Israel. Most of Israelis are part of that movement. So I just think this is completely La La Land. The UN is living in La La Land if it thinks it really is going to achieve anything. The ground reality is that there is a one-state solution is on offer, and that is that the Palestinians must all have a right to a referendum, and it's the Palestinians who are both in the diaspora and those who live in occupied Palestine who have the right to vote on what should be the future of the state. The Israelis need to be basically, the Zionists, the settler immigrants need to be expelled, basically.
Okay, all right. Well, Syed Moaz, U.S. President Donald Trump asked what is the purpose of the United Nations during his speech, saying that it writes strongly worded letters, but empty words don't solve wars. It is an interesting point that he's making. I mean, your thoughts on what he said and why he has said it.
You know, you're absolutely right. He knows the truth because this is exactly what's been going on. But ironically, the frustration of the United States, you have to also understand that now United States is the single country in the Security Council that's blocking Palestinian full membership. This is important. Now, Donald Trump can't just stand with European allies. He has to stand alone. And he is now standing alone with Netanyahu, and he's realizing the difficult situation that Netanyahu has put him in. And this is why they're upset with the European nations, because at first they used to lie on their shoulders and used to have them do a little bit of their dirty work. Now the Europeans have said, listen, we don't want to be a part of this. And even if this means diplomatically, what it's clearly illustrating, there's been a diplomatic failure of the United States. We see Mark Rubio trying to run around, trying to get support, but wasn't able to prevent France, the UK, Australia, and other nations from recognizing Palestine. It was a failure. It's a diplomatic failure, and it's a losing horse. And the thing is, when is the United States going to get out of the way? So you're right. I do agree with Trump, what he's saying is empty words. It is symbolic, and I do agree with my colleague Abbas. And we've yet to see any fruition for this, but it is symbolic nonetheless. It does have certain value. Is it enough value? I completely agree. It's not enough. It's not enough for an immediate ceasefire. It's not enough for the justice for the Palestinian people, not just after October 7th and the many who suffered, but all the way going back to the great issue since 1948. And even before that, during the British Mandate, when the promises were made then. So there is a lot to be achieved from there. But right now, the United States is feeling alone on an island, and it's looking around, and there's no one there but Israel. So when are they going to drop? This is something where I think we are going to start looking. That pressure is definitely going to build.
All right. Well, Syed Mohsen, Trump also addressed the Russia-Ukraine issue, saying that he thought it would be easier to end this. But he says that the key to it all is actually tariffs, that if Russia doesn't end the war, the United States would impose strict tariffs, which would end the war very quickly. But he also at the same time accused NATO countries of hypocrisy, because he said that they're buying oil and gas from Russia at the same time that they're fighting Russia. I mean, your thoughts on it?
Well, Donald Trump is just a spoiler, isn't he? He's been placed there by the people behind the scenes who really run America, the banksters, et cetera, and the moneylender mafia. And he's just an individual who's there to create disruption. His whole purpose is to disrupt the American society from the broad consensus it has had. There's a whipping up of internal fragmentation and fault lines, which are genuine in the US. He's there to also create disruption in Europe. He was sounding off about ridiculous things, just stuff which you'd think, as a political analyst, I'm even loath to even have to address them. But, saying Sadiq Khan is bringing a Sharia state to London and Britain, this is the sort of nonsense that Trumpets, basically. He's there just to create a pantomime there to distract, and nobody can pick him up on it. I mean, if anybody had a discussion around the points which Trump, dwells on with any serious kind of political think tanks, and you'd be laughed out of the room. Yet here is the supposed leader of the free world allowed to get away and to occupy space and time with absolute nonsense. And in terms of Russia, well, he's been saying, before he came into office, he said he would solve the Russian-Ukraine crisis within a matter of days. Well, it's been several months and longer that he's been fiddling around. There's no nearer to the solution. The reality is that the powers that be want war. They want war in Europe. They want war in West Asia. They want war because they make money out of war, and they also distract people with war because their wider objective is the development of a new digital transhumanist order, in which we're all kind of moving towards a complete new reality. And in order for them to deliver that, they've got to have us distracted with wars, with health issues, with chaos, with supposed climate catastrophism, and they're unleashing it all at the same time. That's why you're kind of spinning constantly from one thing to another, and Gaza and the genocide in West Asia and the war on Iran, which is imminent, are all part of that effort to keep people distracted, to keep us in anxiety, to fear, and the public on the ground is in its own turmoil, not only economically, but also just the impact of seeing children with their limbs blown off and what's gone on in Palestine. This is all a deliberate. It's a deliberate exercise in creating this kind of sense of chaos. Mm. And I think, to be honest with you, that's where we are. There's a bigger picture around Gaza, and to be honest, these institutions like the UN, who have the Agenda 2030, don't forget, who Ayatollah Khamenei very wisely has expelled from Iran, because mm-hmm. it's that Agenda 2030 which is being played out, because there's a target for these transnational corporate money mafias, and of which Zionism is very much a part, and Western imperialism is very much a part of that process. I'm afraid that we're inexorably heading that way unless people wake up and join the dots. And of course, we have to feel for Gaza and the empathy for those poor individuals there being used as an experiment, as guinea pigs, as tests for AI and modern technology of how you control a population when it doesn't do what you're telling it. And that's what they're flexing their muscles for. Ukraine and Russia is a war that could be avoided overnight. It made no sense for Europe to go into this. It makes no sense for America to be involved in it. Yet here we are, because it will disrupt the food supplies. It can disrupt the stability in Europe. Or it can destroy the economy around the world, as will fighting Iran also achieve the same objective. There's a march towards disruption and a global disruption, which I believe is deliberately being engineered.
Well, Seyed Moaz, I mean, how can the UN function properly when a country like the United States has a leader who simply lies about reality, saying that, for example, Iran is a terrorist nation and that the country's enrichment capabilities have been completely demolished? Now, this is the same country which has the most influence in the United Nations.
Yeah, no, and you know, let me just start off by saying the United Nations is not the perfect organization. The League of Nations collapsed. It was rebuilt on that. It was rebuilt by the powers who won. Clearly, they did improve on the League of Nations and the flaws in that. But it is a flawed organization that will and must need reform, particularly in the participation of not just Muslim countries, but many countries in the global south that have become independent since its formation. So, yes, that is on the books. And guess what? Trump thought that the United States ran the United Nations. That was well in front. Corrected when he pulled all that funding from the United Nations. And yes, there is a panic. There is a panic right now. I'm in Geneva, so I know. But that has not collapsed the system. The system is still here, but it's in need of reform. And
okay.
This step is in that direction. This step to recognize Palestine is one of those elements that hereby authorizes international actors for states and peoples who have rights that are being abused. The least you can do is at least symbolically recognize their existence. We hope from this, not only are we talking about the symbolic recognition, but potentially sanctions. potentially an increased participation in the ICJ and the court. The Palestinian argument there will become stronger with these countries' participation.
Right.
So these are things that do have value. And let me just add this before I go. Understand that the negative impact on the other side that's going in favor of Palestine is the Israeli relationship with these countries is going to get hurt. They are already threatening to retaliation. How will they retaliate? They will break intelligence links. This is something that may lead to something else. So we need to actually look at this as a cascading effect, not only on one side for the Palestinians, but how that relationship reflects with the Israelis. And I think that may also add some benefit.
Okay, well, we have to keep our eyes on that and see what's happening. But that brings us to the end of this program. Said Moshe, international law expert and geopolitical analyst out of Geneva. Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. Thank you both for being with me, and thank you for staying with us on another Spotlight.
Sun's light, taking away everyone into my heart. Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. This is To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. It's great to have all of you here, and today we want to talk about a character who not only influenced Muslims across the world, but influenced many non-Muslims as well. This great personality is the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him. Imam Ali alayhi salam treated all human beings to be equal in the matter of rights and responsibilities, and he did not fix any limit in this behalf of equality among all human beings. And if he did fix any such limits, it was fixed keeping in mind the interests of the public in general, the people. And when we study the character of Imam Ali, we clearly see that he did not violate this freedom, the freedom of the people, the freedom of the public, the freedom in any of his laws, orders, rules, or regulations, and he always kept the public welfare in his view, in all his actions. He dealt equal treatment to both his friends and his foes.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: كيف تجدك يا أمير المؤمنين؟ فقال عليه السلام: كيف يكون حال من يفنى ببقائه ويسقم بصحته ويؤتى من مأمنه؟
It was said to Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam, "How are you, O Amir al-Mu'mineen?" And he replied, "How can he be whom life is driving towards death, whose state of healthiness can change into sickness any moment, and who is to be caught by death from his place of safety?"
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is To My Brother, and we're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, what a beautiful persona it is to be speaking about. One of the very beautiful characteristics of the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam that every single human being on this planet can benefit from, you know, is that one should treat people fairly. Now, of course, we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam always treated all the people fairly. You know, we find that when he was distributing the public treasury, he would do it fairly and in an equitable manner. He didn't discriminate between free and slave, Arab and non-Arab, man and woman. You know, he distributed it equally and he distributed it fairly. And what's interesting is that this distribution of the public treasury during the caliphate of Imam Ali alayhi salam was something that was very much different than what the previous caliphs had done. And historically, when you go and you check, you see that there was a lot of bias when it came to the distribution of the public treasury during the previous caliphs. And so one of the things that historians have recorded, and it is something that is very proven and it is a clear fact, that Imam Ali alayhi salam distributed the public treasury fairly. And this is just, you know, one manifestation of treating people fairly. In any and all situations, we should treat people fairly. You know, we shouldn't be biased if somebody is our family member or somebody is our friend or somebody is a close relative. You know, and on the other hand, you know, we shouldn't treat people unfairly because perhaps they are a lower social status, financial status that we have, or perhaps, you know, they're not as popular as we are, they're not as, you know, they don't have as many friends as we do. We should be very careful because, you know, in one way or the other, we fall into these traps of treating people unfairly based upon, you know, these kind of petty things. If somebody is poor, we don't treat them fairly. If somebody is not very popular, you know, we don't treat them fairly. If somebody is not a close friend, we don't treat them fairly. If somebody is not a close family member, we don't treat them fairly. Or sometimes, you know, if another person is of a different color or of a different ethnic background or, you know, of a different nationality or a different language, we sometimes treat people unfairly. And, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, we're outright committing blatant oppression. Sometimes it's very small, you know, subtle things that we do that are manifestations of us not treating other people fairly. Perhaps we won't speak, you know, very nicely to an individual. Perhaps we will look with a strange look towards someone. Perhaps we will smirk, or perhaps we will kind of shift our eyes towards an individual. These are very small and subtle manifestations of treating people unfairly. But, you know, if we are followers of Imam Ali alayhi salam, then we should make sure to treat all people fairly and equitably. And, of course, you know, an oppressor must be dealt with as an oppressor, and an oppressed must be dealt with as an oppressed. But the general rule, of course, is to treat people fairly. A very profound lesson indeed brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Aminullah along with its English translations. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma fastajib du'ayi waqbal thanayi wajma bayni wa bayna awliyayi bi haqq Muhammad.
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan, and Al-Hussein. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the fully rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
إنك على كل شيء قدير.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
Allah, after the Messenger of Allah appointed Imam Ali alayhi salam as a successor, successorship, fundamental, critical, to the point, we have a choice. We can say, no, I want to follow what happened in history. And those caliphs that came to me are right. No problem. It's a free world. Choose who you want. No problem. If on Judgment Day, you and I can stand in front of Allah and say, this nafs that you perfected, I use this to follow that. And if there is an ounce of sincerity in it, Allah will not punish that individual. But it behooves me. I think a lot about this. How is it possible that I can think that way? Maybe I'm biased. Maybe I've been raised a certain way. I've been taught to think a certain way, maybe. And I take that into perspective. So I don't pass judgment. When I see even atheists out there, I look in their eyes. I know deep down when they're angry as they are and as wrong as they are, sometimes you see it, that there's a sincere desire to want something that they're just not seeing. And often we, as followers of God, followers of a religion, often we don't step properly with them to talk to them the right way, which then shuts them off again. That's why there's this story of a companion of Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam, who meets Ibn Abi Awja, who is an atheist, and he talks to him, and Ibn Abi Awja raises his temper, you know, he raises his voice out of temper. And the atheist looks at him and says, your master is much better than you. I have been debating with your master, Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam, for a long time. He has never raised his voice. I have a great respect for him. This man was an atheist, but he was inclined towards Islam. Why? Because the character was right. We as believers need to have this exemplary model. That as much as I can believe in the khilafah and the wilayah and the importance of Amirul Mu'mineen, brothers and sisters, if we're not pleasant, if we're not gentle, if we're not broad-minded, if we're not wise, if we're not patient, we're not forgiving, it's not within this prescription of our relationship to Imam Ali alayhi salam's importance of his successorship. Those of us who have held on to it, me, as a lover of Ahlul Bayt, I understand this inner depth because many a times I've tried to negate it. I've said, what if I don't love Ahlul Bayt? Where will I be? And I see the remnants of that disconnection, and I fear it. Because I see the world. The world is out there floating in space. Everybody's looking for the truth. Allah says, غَيْرِ الْمَغْضُوبِ عَلَيْهِمْ وَلَا الضَّالِينَ ضَالِينَهُ. People are disconnected. They have no direction. Allah says, صِرَاطَ الَّذِينَ أَنْعَمْتَ عَلَيْهِمْ. Guide me on the path of those people you have chosen. Quran is saying that, and we say 10 times a day in our daily prayers. What does it mean? This is the celebration. That Allah is saying that if you don't give this appointment, all types of problems, even salah, will not be understood properly. Whether we fold our hands this way, open, sideways. How is it done? What do we do? The most conspicuous act of the Messenger of Allah is salah. If we cannot figure out where his hands are, then if I'm an unbeliever, I can certainly pose that question to say, if this man was so central and pivotal to your faith, how come you don't even know that? Final point I want to make. You might say there are hadith that bring both arguments. Brothers and sisters, let's understand the dynamics of history. They say winners are the ones who write history. When the Umayyad Empire established itself and got a stronghold, it decided to create a pathway, a historical pathway, wherein they became the masters of hadith. And then the Abbasid took over. They continued this process. And as time proceeded, it became solidified in time, which became canonical. Today, when we're arguing and debating at different levels, don't forget this historical context. Just like when I talk to Christians and they say, well, this is what happened with Paul, and this is what happened. True, winners wrote history. They canonized books. They considered them holy. They holified them. They became central to their faith. Now you have to prove everything from the basis of what was canonized as a result of people who came later in history. We have to be wise enough to understand that and to say, okay, let's look at it. But at the end of the day, what really shatters it all is this inner essence to say, has Imam Ali alayhi salam ever been rebuked in the Quran?
for listening to this episode of the program To My Brother. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Heroes of the 8-year Holy Defense. Dear listeners, welcome to our special series on the occasion of the Holy Defense Week, marking start of the 8-year war imposed in 1980 by the US through its agent Saddam, of the tyrannical Ba'ath minority regime of Baghdad in a bid to overthrow the newly established Islamic Republic. This nefarious plot, however, was foiled by the astute leadership of the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, who instilled in the Iranians the spirit of jihad and sacrifice to emerge victorious. Today, we will dwell on the soaring spirit of another pilot, in fact, the pilot of a fighter aircraft, Abbas Babai, who achieved martyrdom while serving Islam and the Islamic Republic. Stay with us, please. As we said in our previous editions, during the 8 years of Holy Defense, the Islamic Republic of Iran was facing the might of almost the whole world. In addition to the weaponry supplied to Saddam by the capitalist West and communist East, the repressive Ba'ath minority regime was funded and financed to the tune of scores of billions of dollars by the reactionary Arab regimes, especially the spurious British-created entity called Saudi Arabia. It was thus faith in Islam and the teaching of the Prophet and his infallible Ahlul Bayt that inspired Iran's Muslim combatants to foil the intricate plot of the enemies of humanity. One such intrepid defender of the country was Abbas Babai, who was born in a religious family in Ghazvin in 1950 and after schooling joined the Air Force. In the pre-revolution days, Iran was a client state of the Great Satan, that is US, and American experts and military advisors did not allow Iranians to completely master the skills for maintenance and repair of airplanes. Even the Iranian cadets dispatched to the US for training were not given proper training. Yet, in spite of these restrictions, Abbas Babai, who was sent to the US for training, devoted himself to the mastering of the techniques of operating fighter planes, especially F-14. A pious man, Abbas Babai, during his training years in the US, took extra care against being influenced by the decadent Western culture. He used to avoid all unclear foods and drinks and regularly observed his religious rites and rituals. On return to Iran, he became a pilot of Northrop F-5 and trained under McDonnell Douglas F-4 Phantom II and Grumman F-14 Tomcat. He married his cousin Maliheh and was based in Khuzestan province when the Islamic Revolution triumphed. He joined the revolutionaries and vowed to devotedly serve the ideals of the Islamic Republic. When the war started, Abbas Babai enthusiastically carried out whatever operations that were entrusted to him. Martyr Abbas Babai was a great man who was raised in the school of martyrdom. He was a fighter whose piety and devotion was a byword. He was a virtuous man whose soul was filled with love, selflessness, and generosity, a soldier who was a brave veteran of battlefields and a great fighter against his own carnal desires. He used to secretly provide financial help to the needy persons, especially colleagues who were from poor families. In 1981, the 31-year-old Abbas Babai, as head of the Air Base Islamic Society, was made commander of the 8th Air Force Base. After showing his competence and his commitment while serving as the commander of Isfahan Air Base, in 1983 he was appointed as the deputy head of Air Force Operation and transferred to Tehran. Abbas Babai, with over 3,000 hours of air flights with different types of jet fighters, spent most of his time in operational fights and war fronts in the west and south of Iran. From 1985 until his martyrdom in 1987, he carried out over 60 war missions with full success. For the speedy progress of operations, he did not limit himself to supervision, but he always took part in war missions to become aware of problems and probable risks. In view of his competence and bravery, he was promoted as Brigadier General in 1987, a few weeks before his martyrdom. While returning from a mission, Abbas Babai was hit by an Iraqi air defense system and martyred. In the morning of Eid al-Adha, he and his co-pilot took off in a F-5 training plane from the Tabriz Air Base and entered Iraq's airspace. After conducting a successful mission, his plane was hit and he sustained injuries. Although the co-pilot managed to land the aircraft, Abbas Babai achieved martyrdom.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brother, dear sister, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Today's episode is about a hadith that challenges almost everything we assume about fairness, relationships, and character. It's from Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace be upon him, who said, "There are three things in which Allah, God, the Almighty, has granted no excuse: returning a trust to both the righteous and the corrupt, fulfilling promise to both the righteous and the corrupt, and honoring your parents, whether they are righteous or